American songwriter, we had the opportunity to talk to Mike Dillon over Zoom video. Mike talked to us about where he grew up and how he got into music. He talked about being in the drum line and in marching band as a kid, into high school, even going to college to join the marching band at North Texas State University. From there, he's played in numerous bands, including he's performed with Les Claypool, Ani DeFranco. He played on the Revivalist record. He's got his own solo project. He's releasing three records. During quarantine, he was able to write and record three full albums. He has them all coming out. He talks all about that. And he was in the van getting ready to play a show, which I thought was awesome, in New Orleans. There, apparently, they have some really spread out, very social distanced concerts going on right now, which is awesome to see. So you can watch the interview with Mike Dillon and myself on our Facebook page and YouTube channel at Bringing It Backwards, and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Bringing Back Pod.
We'd appreciate your support if you follow and subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're Bringing It Backwards with Mike Dillon. Thank you again for doing this. Appreciate it. Our podcast is about your journey in music. I love what you just did. That was amazing.
I just took a journey. You asked one question, and that was the state of affairs of the music during quarantine. You know, so
aside from writing three records for you, right?
Yeah, and then there was that side of it, like writing records. I just really was like, all right, I'm not on the road 200 days this year. Mm-hmm. Great. Like, I finished a 2-month tour, got home, and was just like, all right, no one's coming over. We're not doing anything. Just started writing. My wife is a killer artist, and she and I just started collaborating, messing around with lyrics. And I was having fun with my computer and my giant space and the piano. And I'd gotten all these new synths that I had laying around. I was like, all right, time to figure this out with this Malakat I bought like a year and a half ago. Nearly 2 years now, and got like a sheet. Like, all of a sudden, I was like, wow, I got like 20 something songs. Let's go in the studio. And the next thing I know, I finished more of the suitcase songs. Like, and then I was like, all right, now I need to do those. I got like 28 songs. So, literally, I think I recorded 32 songs, and yeah. Three albums.
That's crazy. That's crazy. I'll get to that. I want to talk to you real quick, briefly, about where you grew up and how you got into music.
Yeah, I grew up in Houston.
Okay.
And I just remember from being a kid, always, like, if there was something on TV with a drummer, I was fascinated by it. Mm-hmm. If, whenever we were, like, traveling with my parents or whatever, if we stayed in a hotel, you know, back in the old days, even like in, say, Abilene, Texas or somewhere, there was usually a band playing in the Holiday Inn, you know, in the bar.
Oh, that's rad. Yeah.
You know, and I could just remember seeing like, oh, wow, I really like the drummer, or watching the Jackson 5 cartoon. So I had an interest in drums. In fifth grade, I bought a drum set. I was in the school band.
Yeah, I saw a picture on your Instagram of you on like a marching band. It said like 1985, and there was a photo. Am I mistaken?
No, yeah. So that was college. So yeah, like.
Oh, that was in college. Okay, I'm sorry.
Elementary school. No, fine. Went to junior high. Went to high school. Was in the Houston Youth Symphony, and then went to North Texas State University and continued my studies in percussion there. I played in the drum line there in the pit, playing marimba and vibes and xylophone, whatever they told me, for 2 years.
Sure.
And then at right around that time, when I was a freshman, got into Latin percussion.
Oh, wow.
Congas and timbales and bongo, and started taking that. You know, that was great. North Texas was a very diverse program. Took drum set lessons, you know, all the classical stuff as well. And got a good basis, and then I started gigging around Texas. And
did you go? You went into school for drums?
Oh yeah, I was a music major.
Oh, that's dope. Okay.
Yeah, I was a complete music major, and was pretty much just like, I'm going to be a percussionist in bands, and that's what I started doing.
Did you play in bands? I mean, obviously in marching band and stuff. Were you in like punk bands or like little bands with friends in high school or middle school or anything like that?
Yeah, in high school, middle school, we had a band that won the talent show.
Oh, dope.
In the 70s, it played like, Led Zeppelin, I'm sure, really awfully. And we played, I remember we played American Bands, Rocking the Cowbell, and other songs. I can't remember. That was back in the 70s. But and then played in another band in high school that we played a bunch of Rush and Police and Yes and whatever else, you know. And that was when I, through that band, I was like, I just really got the bug to do the music thing. It was so much fun, and going to band practice every night, and I was taking drum set lessons, and just really, you know, went to school every day and did that, but I couldn't wait to get home every day and play my drum set. And then, you know, one or two days a week we had band practice. And then when I went up to North Texas, you know, besides marching band, they had a great jazz program. I was in the jazz bands. You know, I was in, they had like this all synthesizer ensemble I played percussion in. They play like funk covers and whatnot, Herbie Hancock songs. And so, you know, got a little taste of everything, then start playing in like some rock bands and, you know, some stuff that was sort of punky when I was in Denton. Then we had this band called Tin Hands that Matt Chamberlain and I started with Gary Mueller and Paul Slavens and Steve Brand. And we got really popular. It was like Frank Zappa meets the Talking Heads.
Oh, cool.
Meets whatever else we were into. And we were really into Gabriel. Like that record was huge, the So record. And
sure.
And right about that time, I saw the Bad Brains play. So punk rock was going off in my head big time.
Okay.
So I was sort of like the aggressive punk rock. You know, I always just tried to bring the energy, because that was, to me, it was the most captivating thing and compelling thing about the punk rock stuff, was just the energy of the show. Like seeing HR doing a gainer into the crowd and the whole place just erupt.
Right.
And then after that, you know, I got thrown out of Tin Hands for being too, like, always stage diving and causing shit on stage. And then I saw Billy Goat,
which too was awesome. Heavily,
you know, Billy Goat, which was like funk punk, because that was like really getting big. Everyone loved the Chili Peppers and Fishbone.
Oh, sure.
The aforementioned Bad Brains, 24/7 Spies. You know, we loved Firehose, got to open for those guys. And
wow.
You know, just the whole late 80s, saw George Clinton play and would end up at like seeing Gore and, you know, just all kinds of shows that came through. Jane's Addiction rolled through, saw those guys well before they got famous on the XXX.
Wow.
You know, nothing, stage diving with Perry Farrell. I kicked Perry Farrell's mic out at his show and I got tackled by the bouncers, but you know that was what it was, you know.
And sure,
just then, and that was around 90, and then Billy Goat started touring nationally, and then I just started, and I was always relying on the guys in the band to write the songs, and Billy Goat and I'd write the lyrics. We'd write songs as a band. But that was right at the beginning when I started like getting into the songwriting process, and I had no clue what I was doing, because I was a drummer,
but because
I played mallets in the marching band and mallets in jazz ensemble and knew a little bit about jazz harmony and, you know, Western harmony from my music classes, I had this old vibraphone laying around. Right about midway through Billy Goat, I started writing songs on my vibes.
Oh, interesting.
And really getting into vibraphone. And that was like 94. And then I started going to jazz jams and like playing B flat blues and like Horace Silver songs, really songs that they would play at these jams. And of course I sucked and I got lost. I would be like, but I kept practicing. And it was really in Thelonious Monk. And then when Billy Goat broke up around 97, that's when I started the Hairy Apes BMX, called Hairy Apes Butt Moving Experience in Austin. And then that was the first band I started playing vibes in full time.
Oh, sure. Okay.
All right. And then from that, it just sort of sprung board into, I joined this band called Critters Buggin' right about the same time. I was a percussionist, and that was with Skerrick and Matt Chamberlain, Brad Hauser. And we were touring. And that was when I sort of got introduced to the jam band scene. And like, we were touring with like Modesky, Martin and Wood, and play shows with Grey Boy All-Stars and speaking of San Diego. And
yeah,
so that was happening late 90s. And then right around 2000, we did some shows with Les Claypool. And, you know, I saw Primus a lot back in the day. I mean, Billy Goat opened for Primus in 1990 out in Sacramento. And, you know, we opened for Fishbone too back in the day. But so then next thing I know, I got around 2002, started playing with Les and the Frog Brigade.
That's amazing.
Made the Purple Onion record and then played with him a lot. Critters Buggin' was still doing shows. Harry Apes had sort of peaked around 2002 or three, but played with Les from like 2002 to 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's when I think he went back to Primus full time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, started right around in the middle of that stuff with Les was starting to play with Ani DeFranco because I live in New Orleans then. And I met her. She was married to a good friend of mine. And I ended up playing percussion for her. So I was really busy jumping between my stuff, Les's stuff. And
her stuff.
And Ani. And then she went a different direction. And I started I had Mike Dillon's Go-Go Jungle in there.
Mm-hmm.
That was about 2000. That was after the Harry Apes broke up, 2006. Do you like 2010 sort of time frame?
Mm-hmm.
Then started in this band called the Dead Kenny G's, which was like straight up.
That's a rad name.
Yeah, totally.
The Dead Kenny G's.
Dead Kenny G's. And then then after that, started the Mike Dillon Band about 2012. And then toured with that. And we started playing all the jam band festivals and it was really fun. Then changed lineup. And then, about 2014, you know, I was hanging out with Claude from Ween. He was playing in the band.
Oh, wow. That's rad.
And then Les called me and was like, hey, I'm going to do a Primus tour for the Fungi and the Chocolate Ensemble.
Wow.
Like, Primus and the Fungi Ensemble. It was a cello player and myself on mallets. And we did a whole year with Primus. As their auxiliary ensemble. Oh, it was incredible.
Oh, man.
I mean, you know, Primus has always been one of my favorite bands from my generation. And, you know, Les has taught me a lot about sonic stuff and just watching him being an amazing band leader. And then there was just the playing with him. He always pushes you to play amazing stuff.
I was going to ask you about that since, you know, like drums and bass go hand in hand, right? With, you know, the rhythm section of the band. Was it wild playing with him because he's so insane on bass?
I mean, yeah. The first time I jammed with him, I was like, oh my God, I love his concept and playing with him. And, you know, and he's also a great songwriter. And he, you know, being in the studio with him, the record, I think it was called Of Whales and Woe. I was actually there a lot, just hanging out.
That's rad.
And just hanging out and watching him write in the studio and coming up with beats with him and marimba parts. It was really fun. So there was just always this arc and pattern of growth happening.
Mm-hmm.
And living in New Orleans, then there's that whole side of things. Just whenever I was off the road, I was here in New Orleans, playing with different great musicians, whether it was like George Porter Jr. and Johnny Vodakovich on Thursday nights at the Maple Leaf, or my friend James Singleton, who I'm about to go play with. Mm-hmm. I'm about to leave here in about 10 minutes to go make that gig. Sure. And then, you know, people like Ivan Neville around town, getting to do jams with him and witness like what a great musician. And then just like watching bands like Dumpster Funk or, you know, playing with Galactic or seeing this young band, The Revivalists, come up.
Oh, yeah. Love
you know,
they're a New Orleans band too, right?
Yeah. You know, I played on their record in 2014.
Oh, really?
You know, Men Amongst Mountains. I played percussion on that record.
That's amazing. You know, so you played on the Waves record too, right?
Yeah, I played on the Waves record. They're from your part of the world, right?
Yeah, they are. That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, my cousin's a big producer. And then 2016, Ricky Lee Jones, big artist from the 80s, late 70s, she had moved down here. She came to one of my jazz gigs, and I've been playing with her for the past 4 years. She and Tom Waits dated back in the late 70s, early 80s. So, like, that's they were rad. Writing all these songs. Like, so besides being around great musicians, I've been around some amazing songwriters and singers, people mm-hmm. that take that side of it real, very seriously. And so it just all just keeps pointing towards, I think, where I am today, like mm-hmm. Austin just releasing three records.
That's huge. I mean,
they're all coming out on March 12th.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love the two songs that you've put out so far. They're great.
Cool.
Yeah. I really like those. So what were the, was this like a, is each record like a concept album, or is it just three records that you ended up having a bunch of songs for and you're like, okay, this is the, you know, first album, this is 1918. Like, how did that work?
Well, yeah, it was definitely, there was a lot of concept behind it. Suitcase Man was the more singer-songwriter record. Like, I'm just going to have very stripped down, nothing but mallets.
Okay.
And vocals. And I got my friend Tiff Lampson from Givers and JJ Jungle from the Harry Aches Butt Movement Experience to do the backgrounds with me. So, you know, my concept on that was like, I want to do like my Leonard Cohen record, or
sure.
you know, my Elliott Smith with just guitar and vocals record, mm-hmm. but do it with vibraphone. And that's been the other side of all this, is like, you know, back in the old days, you had like Tito Puente leading the band and playing packed places because as a percussionist band leader, or mm-hmm. Spike Jones, this
sure.
amazing, not the movie director, but the old school musician who toured the country, Spike Jones, had a sort of variety act, and he was a percussionist singer. So I'm sort of tapping into that energy and doing all this stuff as a lead vibraphonist,
okay.
lead mallet percussionist. So it's like, if guitar is, you know, red and your normal painting palette of American music at this point, mm-hmm. you know, guitar, bass, and drums, vibraphone sort of sits over in this other category, like if like it's like Jackson Pollock or something, you know, it's just like not your normal texture that people paint pictures with.
Sure.
So I feel really lucky that I'm trying to lead the band with a vibraphone, but many times people walked in and they'd be like, oh, there's a band here, cool, where's the guitar player? You know, because for years we didn't tour with a guitar at all. Now
that's amazing.
Now I have guitar in my band. I mm-hmm. love guitar. It's super inspiring. I mean, I have no trips with guitar players, but that's sort of the concept, and just rock it. Okay, so that was Suitcase Man. Then Shoot the Moon, both Shoot the Moon and 1918 started off with like, I had a bunch of, I had an analog drum machine, I had a digital drum machine, and I had a bunch of analog synths. Mm-hmm. And I was just sort of experimenting my writing using those textures, because, and I came up with a lot of it on at the Greenwood Social Hall where I live in Kansas City. I came up with a lot of it just, and I'd never really done a record where I started everything and actually took the tracks I started on my computer into the studio, with the exception of my MC Silver Ice record, Return of the Non Sequitur, which was all done on my laptop and garage bands. I took it into a studio and beat it up. But so the idea was like, all right, I got all these songs recorded. I like the way they sound. I'm going to take them into the studio and see what happens. We had no rules other than that was sort of the guiding principle, was like, start off with drum machines, mm-hmm. percussion and vibes, a lot of synth bass. It was almost like an electronic record. Like, I love the way Nine Inch Nails records and some sound, you know, some of them he even has talked about in podcasts and whatnot, that he was like, this record was more like a garage band record, mm-hmm. garage rock band. And this one's more like electro. So, and then we started just sending out tracks to all our friends around the country going, and that was happening even before I went into the studio, like my buddy Matt Chamberlain sending some tracks. And I was just like, I got to do this. So yes, the concept was quarantine recording sessions and send it all to my favorite drummers. That was the beginning, and rad. See what they, what they did for that. So like Earl Harvin, who's played with the and Steel, and he lives in Berlin. He's played with NC9 for Jesus. He was Billy Goat's drummer. You know, he's on that Sam Smith record that's friggin' huge. You know, he's done all kinds of stuff. Plays with Michelle and Deachello when she's in Europe. He's a bad man, as Stephen A would say. Sent him a bunch of stuff. Matt Chamberlain out in LA sent him. He gave me two tracks. Jean-Paul Gaster from Clutch gave me that song Kool-Aid Man that I think you've heard.
Yeah, you just put out. I love it.
We just put out. That's him on drums. And that's cool because that's actually him on one drum set. I'm on one drum set. And then we have this analog drum machine just trying to do like this krautrock beat underneath. And then we mixed it all in. My buddy Robbie Mangano plays this amazing guitar solo on it. You know, so after we got all the drum tracks, my bass player from my band did a lot of bass stuff. And then I started sending it out to guitar players. And then like on that song on Shoot the Moon, the title track, we literally have like 20 vocalists in the middle choir part. I think we had like 140 tracks on that song.
Whoa, that's crazy.
Maxed out the studio's computer. So, you know, and I, you know, usually I was always like, okay, well, I got a week to make a record, then I got to get back on tour. So all my records sound like I was making them in a week. And I love that. That's like, I mean, heck, Husker Du made that amazing record of theirs, and I could recorded it, mixed it, and everything in 24 hours. So amazing records can be done shortly, but for me it was really nice to like go into the studio, start working, and we just took our time working on it. I drive around listening all week before I went back in, and then I in the meantime I'd be like, "Ooh, I really like that. I'm gonna send that to this guy, that to this guy." And it really was a fun way for me to make a record, just take my time and then also hear things production wise. We got my buddy Steven Bernstein. He took like a month and a half making his tracks on that tune, Further Adventures and Misadventure. It's like a slide trumpet orchestra. It's beautiful. And then like Nicholas Payton, from the great trumpet player from New Orleans, he graciously did just this. I was, you know, I sent him the track, and being known as sort of a weird musician, I love it when guys send me back stuff that's, I think, is really weird. Sure. It's gonna sound like some Ornette Coleman stuff. So, you know, it was just like there were no rules. And the other side, we were like, let's approach this like David Byrne, Brian Eno, my life in the bush of ghosts. Like, just make a record. There's no rules whatsoever. And let's see what happened. And I just really enjoyed the process immensely. And I'm so grateful that Royal Potato Family Records is putting all three of them out. I guess we just got Suitcase Man back from the manufacturer. So two more records come back and people will be getting their pre-sales that they
I love ordered. That. That's cool. I love how you said we spent some time to make a record, but you spent some time to make three records.
Three records.
That's so awesome. I know you got to get to your show. I have one more question for you, Mike, before I let you go. I want to know if you have any advice for aspiring artists.
My advice, and I was thinking about this, was like, you know, there's certain people when they get into music, they're just so gifted and they're so talented. And they're incredible. Then there's the rest of us. We have to have to work our asses off, you know? I remember when I was about to go to North Texas, my high school band director was like, "You don't want to go to North Texas. You're not good enough. You need to like go to like a smaller college." And, you know, but that's the generation I was from. We didn't get a trophy for showing up. You know, we were told like, "You sucked." But that being said, like, it doesn't matter how you were raised, whether it was like old school parenting or the new school parenting or in between, what matters is don't give up. All along the way, there's going to be people tell you you suck. You know, people are going to love you. People are going to hate you. But as long as you love what you're doing, that's all that matters. Like, ultimately, I made all these records for me. There was nothing else to do. And I'm just trying to become a better songwriter. I mean, I can remember driving around my van going back when I was in my early 20s going, man, these guys are in the band that write the songs. How do they do that? That's how do you write a song? I want to learn how to write a song. And then it's just like anything else. If you just write a song a day, you're going to get better. That's why to me, like Mike Watt has been one of my heroes. And, you know, I've read somewhere in an interview back in the 90s, he was like, write a song a day, you'll get better, you know? Mm-hmm. And to me, that was the whole thing about being in a punk rock band. You know, I was never in a straight hardcore punk rock band, but to me, like the Minutemen or Firehose, like all those old SST bands that were punk rock bands all sounded different. Like mm-hmm. Dead Kennedys sounded different than Sonic Youth, than Firehose, than the Meat Puppets, than Husker Du, then the, you know, everything wasn't homogenized, but there was this spirit of like, just do it. Like, oh, you like this band? Start your own band. Like you would hear the stories. All right, have a good night. Now go start your own band. That was like the old school punk rock. Like everyone started a band.
That's dope.
It's totally true. Like I remember going to shows in the 80s. I was the nerdy band guy that somehow ended up at a punk rock show and was just like, wow, this is cool. And wait, that guy said, all right, go start your own band. You know, and to me, you know, even like the Beastie Boys, they were so rad because they had that punk rock spirit in them.
Sure.
And so that's my limited 2 cents of where I'm at today. Sort of insane after driving 850 miles with 4 hours of sleep.
Thank you for doing this.
Oh man, thank you for having me. It was a joy to talk about my silly little world. But the main thing about to other artists, and whether you're a percussionist or whatever you do, a singer, is just don't give up. I've seen a lot of great musicians and artists just give up. And the music business is pretty brutal. Google what Hunter S. Thompson had to say about the music business if you haven't read that. It sums it up.